Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure. And there's a subtle difference between our mics here. You seem to be a lot louder than I am for some reason.
I'm just a loud guy. I don't know. Yeah, I think if people could listen to us when we are on the break, we've got a caller coming in as well.
You do?
Yes. If they could listen to us on the break, we were discussing two different economic opinions on crime rates in New York based on drones in Virginia and cameras in London.
And Seattle. Don't forget Seattle.
We're not going to tell you any of the details of it, but that's what we were discussing as we were talking about competing economic theories on what causes crime rates to
drop. The difference between Freakonomics and the tipping point.
Right.
Right. This is
our normal conversation.
Actually, we kind of ratchet up the interest rate of our conversation when we're on the air. We get seriously geeky off the air. Anyway, so the telephone numbers to call in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. And we have a caller on 773-1400.
Okay, and caller on 773-1400, you're on the air with a personal wealth coach. Go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen.
Where?
I don't know about this gentleman business. People keep claiming that.
We work for a living.
Well, that still does not preclude the fact that you might be gentlemen.
We could be American gentlemen, which is different
than
British gentlemen, I suppose.
Yeah.
If we might wander back to the economy for a moment, since y'all have just self-admitted that the plans for both political parties are just merely different branches of the road to perdition.
Well, actually, they're, sort of. I mean, basically,
different perditions,
if we were able to compromise and get some cuts on one side and some tax increases on the other side, we'd probably do very, very well going forward. If both sides hold their ground...
We're in trouble.
Well, I'd like to submit to you for your consideration that if somewhere near 50% of the population pays no income taxes...
That's not true.
They pay Social Security taxes, but not income taxes.
And what happens to the money that they pay in to the Social Security Administration?
It goes back to...
The general fund. It's just another form of income tax.
That have managed to achieve a certain age. Well,
no, it doesn't. It goes into the big pot. With everything else, it's basically Social Security. The FICA goes into the same pot, in essence, as do your regular income taxes.
Now, just as a key point here, the last 2 years, the money that was collected through FICA was not enough to meet Social Security and Medicare demands.
Yeah, but it all goes into the same pot.
Yeah, because we got the boost to back up to normal rates on FICA. And FICA is the payroll tax. We're back in surplus.
That FICA taxes have been subverted to the general fund.
They always have been.
Does not change the fact that, by definition, 50%, roughly 47%, do not pay AKA income taxes.
Well, if you're paying. Let's just say you were self-employed,
which I am,
which you are. And you had a couple of kids and a wife, and you're making enough money that you're making a living, but not by much. You would only be paying 15% of your income, period, no deductions, to the federal government. And you're saying that that person who's paying 15% is paying no income tax.
Not by definition income tax.
Well,
you
can call it whatever you want, but it's taken as a percentage of income and it is a tax.
Well, there's no doubt that it's a tax, but the point I'm trying to get to is that the ones of us that actually pay, once again, AKA an income tax.
Right.
If we raise taxes enough on that percentage of the population, does that not, once again, put the economy back into a very dangerous place?
There's something called the Laffer curve, and there's a Laffer point. It's named after an economist whose last name, coincidentally, is Laffer.
His first name is Arthur.
Yes, and I've had very interesting discussions with him a couple of times because we happen to be speaking at the same place. But the issue is that we want certain government services. And if we want those government services, such as Medicare, Social Security, the Coast Guard, the FBI, all that stuff that we want the highways built, then we have a choice. We can, I mean, really, we're in this interesting position right now. We, at the revenue that's coming into the government, we're spending too much money. So here's the question. Where do we cut the spending so that the budget comes into balance? And I'd ask you, where do we do that? And would that not have a very detrimental effect on the economy if all of a sudden, for example, let's just say that we go with sequester. The biggest chunk will come from the defense, and there'll be a lot of people in Bell County who won't have jobs anymore and won't be paying income tax anymore and won't be buying things anymore, or at least not many things. Won't that have a negative effect on the economy?
Well, it certainly would to some degree, but to your point, it, for me, it'd be pretty simple where we'd cut spending. Number one, we'd eliminate the things that everybody argues does not matter in the budget,
right?
Such as NEA and support for public radio,
right.
And some of those minor things. But
that's
the other
very, very
side
small.
Of that is, we'd just simply cut across the board.
You've now cut about 0.1% of the problem.
Yeah,
I concur, and that would have to be an ongoing effort.
Yeah, let me address something
wait a
here.
Let him. You said number one. What would you cut next? Because now you haven't had any effect on it.
Well, just like I said, it'd be across the board. Whatever it would have to be over a given time period. But
what would you cut?
I would cut defense, certainly, and there's no doubt about it. It's there. If there's waste in it, certainly there's got to be room after we have walked out of the two wars and are going to declare a victory. There's got to be plenty of room there.
No, there actually isn't.
And, well,
let me explain why. We've worn out all our equipment in these wars. Now we got to replace it.
Okay. Simple matter, once again, Jeff, or Jake, either one, if your clientele that you all represent was reduced by whatever the number is, and you'd have to reduce your spending. I mean, there's no question about that. And government cannot function indefinitely without paying a attention to the rules of economics.
You and I agree completely.
My only question is, what I'm trying to point out is that since we show no political will to do the compromise to the degree that would be required,
right?
Don't we fall back into a position to where the government that is not elected can be put in a position to go to just simply inflating our currency to cover the difference?
What government that's not elected are you talking about?
Well, for the Federal Reserve,
that's not really government, though.
Do you know how much? Do you know how much inflation we're running right now?
It's very, very low, and I would be, other than food and energy, which is would get us back to the core number, I would suspect we might still be below zero.
We are.
Now, there's a couple of things here. I want to first address your first point, the one that you called in about, and I think there's a lot of truth in it. A lot of truth. 49% of the people in 2009 that filed taxes did not owe any taxes in the federal income level. They did have to pay the FICA tax. They did,
They're paying about 15%.
However, when you were talking about the Laffer curve, we were talking about 18% being the point, mm-hmm. and we were talking about federal income tax.
Well, I'm talking about total federal revenues. Total revenues, not just income
correct.
Tax.
So FICA and income taxes.
The total income to the federal government from all sources.
All amounts to about 18%. So I want to make that clear.
16%.
I'm sorry. Yes, the sweet spot is about 18%. So what I am pointing out, though, is the current tax system is wrong. It is convoluted. It is stupid. It is expensive. And there are a lot better ways of doing it. I mean, we've proved that every year in Texas that a good sales tax that's assigned correctly, the people that are of low income still wind up paying a much lower percentage in taxes. But the revenue is healthy based because it encourages saving and investing, and it allows people to choose when they're going to spend their tax money. Choose.
And our chances of getting something that logical on the federal level remain zero.
Slim to none, yes. Yeah, very low.
We are completely agreement on
that. Now, to come at it from the other side of this, the budget issues, what you were saying about trimming across the board, I completely concur with, and that's basically what Paul Ryan has come out with. The problem is that every time you trim right across, it's very easy, again, the political will, it's very easy to come out with a demagoguery and of you hate old people, or you hate veterans, or you hate to fill in the blank because you're cutting their budget.
Yeah.
And it, you know, if you cut across the board, you're cutting everybody, and that means you hate everybody. And it's really easy to get a soundbite up.
You know, I actually discussed this with a guy who is one of the Tea Party founders in this area. And he was very angry at me when we were done.
Oh, no.
Because, you know, and I'm not just one person. I've discussed this with a whole series of people who retired, for example, from the military. And they have very high disability levels, according to the military, but in fact have been able to start second careers making significantly more money than they made in the armed forces, but they are still treated for tax purposes on their retirement income as if they were nearly fully disabled. And yeah. I said, well, let's cut spending a little bit. Let's just do away with that. Man,
they
you
get
want
upset.
A firestorm.
And the thing is, when we say this, this is exactly what the point that we were just talking about. If we say, let's look at spending there and see what we can cut, and we talked about this just, three or four weeks ago, and I got a firestorm in my office from my clients that are military retirees that have disabilities. And they come in and they say, you don't want me to get paid what I was earned for. I lost the ability to use part of my leg. I've had knees replaced, and you don't want me to be paid for that. And I'm saying, well, this is obviously where it's very easy for a soundbite to say, Jake McClure hates veterans, especially disabled ones.
Yeah, and that's just one example.
but the government cannot spend the way it's spending. And he would be the guy that was telling me this would be the first to say that. We can't keep doing what we're doing.
Let me give you
Do they not represent a microcosm of our nation and where it stands? And
yes.
Voters vote solely, it appears, or at least in the majority,
their own best interest.
In their self-interest, and could care less about the direction of the country.
Well, I don't think we're there. I think it's not a matter of could care less or couldn't care less. I think people generally want to care about the direction of the country, but they have this attitude of somebody else is getting unfair advantage, so I want an unfair advantage too.
And I know that feeling. I definitely know that feeling. Where you see someone else, that's the nature of socialism. It really is. You see someone else getting an advantage that you don't have for free.
It's the monkeys.
So I want to get that advantage too, or I want to get mine. If they're giving it out, I better get it before it's all gone.
On YouTube, there is a video of something that I consider to be one of the most. It's in a TED Talk.
Oh yeah.
There's these two monkeys that are being given little pieces of cucumber, and
one's given a cucumber and one's
no. Wait a minute. Let me finish. And what happens is they pick up a pebble, they give it to the trainer, the person who's working with them. And then they're given a little piece of cucumber. They're perfectly happy with that.
They like the cucumber.
And they're side by side. They're in plexiglass cages.
Right next to each other.
And then they change it very slightly so that one of the monkeys is getting a grape for giving the pebble, and the other one is still getting the piece of cucumber. The one that's getting the piece of cucumber looks at the cucumber, looks over at the other guy who got a grape, and throws the cucumber back at the researcher.
They were fine with the cucumber before they knew somebody else was getting a grape when they got a cucumber.
Well, I guess that might lead some credence to evolution, then, if we behave no better than they.
Right. Well, this is great because the union argument of things should be fair, equal work, equal pay, if we look at it from an advanced perspective, say we are more evolved and we say, I'm getting paid cucumbers and that's what I agreed to get paid. So I'm getting paid cucumbers and they're getting paid grapes. I'm fine with that because there's something inside us that says, wait a minute, I should be getting grapes too. But there's actually some biblical references here about grapes as well.
Wrath.
Where the master goes out and hires people to harvest grapes and then halfway through the day realizes that's not going to be enough people. So hires another group of people to work half a day at the same pay. And the first group of people comes in and says, wait a minute, they're working half a day and they're getting the same thing we get. We want more. And he says, I agreed with you that I would pay you this much. I'm not lowering that. I'm just paying them something different. This is so fundamental. Buddha talked about it. Jesus talked about it. You just go through. Muhammad talked about it.
Anyway, the point is that, and this is where we run into problems. If we want the level of government we have, and actually we want more government than we have, and if you don't believe that, go into a Social Security office and notice that you have to stand in a long line because most of the windows will have nobody there to talk to you because they have laid off a lot of people. Yeah. We want the government we have. Fundamentally, at about 18% of GDP, we can afford the government we have, which we have done in the past, but we only want to pay 16% of GDP in taxes. That's the conundrum that's going on.
And part of that issue, and this is to come at it from the last piece of the puzzle, in my opinion, is that the states have stepped up and added a whole bunch of services on top of that. And so when the states step up, if you look at our historic tax rate, the states have had a very, very small piece of the pie. And over the last 30 or 40 years, that piece of the pie has gotten bigger and bigger. So that if you look at the actual tax rates across the country, we're talking about 23% of people's income is going towards taxes. Where before, we were talking about 18, 19% total.
Well, that was just at the federal level.
Well, 18. The 18 was federal level. There really
property
wasn't
taxes.
A whole lot of local taxes. Most people didn't own property, even at a level that the taxes are now. So if you look at the percentage of income, and I've got a nice graph of that when you combine all of it. We're paying more taxes now than we had before.
Caller, what would you have, if you had control of the federal government, what would you do to fix it?
Well, just like I said, and you asked, one of the examples I should have given you immediately was that I, for one, and probably in such a humongous minority as to not even count, if we had the corresponding cuts and increases in revenues, if that's what it took, I think that I would forego COLA on Social Security when I achieve that age. Those are just
you and I agree with that.
I think means testing is a very, very
means testing.
Nice approach.
And I think, I guess you're aware the big debate now, and this is where the Democrats, by the way, are stonewalling, is over chained CPI.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think we should immediately, the chained consumer price index actually is more accurate.
Yeah.
And
well, for those
it should
of you
be applied to federal benefits.
For those of you that have no idea what a chained CPI is, you're not geeky enough, obviously. But
obviously.
I'll help you out to become more geeky. A chained CPI, consumer price index, is what the federal government has used to track inflation and deflation. A chained CPI is looking at constant dollars of a specific year so that we can get more accurate based on a much more recent year that we have a lot more data on, instead of trying to use dollars from 1920s, where we don't really, there's a lot of items that didn't exist back then. So how many computers could you buy with a 1920s dollar? And we don't know.
But it boils down to the fact that the increases in Social Security in the future would be slightly smaller. And by the way, that would solve the problem.
Obvious to me. Since y'all are students of history, I will pose a question and then listen on the radio. Has there been a country that you can point to that has taken this steady road to socialism and then has escaped it before it collapsed?
Germany.
Thank y'all guys for your time.
Okay, thank you. We'll talk about that.
Yeah. There have been many in the past, but one comes to mind right now is Germany.
Well, Germany has a relatively short history at this point because they basically were reinvented in 1946. So.
True, but they took the road to socialism. They did. They walked down
that
path.
And they backed off of it quite a ways.
And a very, very easy way of looking at that, half of the country was social. I mean, there's no maybe a little bit sort of, no, it was, and they have come back from it, and the successes are building. They're kind of carrying Europe right now.
Well, you could say China did, too. China was a socialist government and is moving towards democracy. I think there's a swing back and forth. As countries become more prosperous and more urbanized, they tend to become more collectivized. That's what urban living is all about. And we probably swing a little too far in one direction. I mean, that's a healthy thing that socioeconomic systems do. And then they tend to swing back in the other direction. And hopefully our system will enable us to reach some kind of a balance. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, guys. I have a question on Social Security disability income. Is that Social Security disability income taxable or not?
It's a good
question. Typically, it is not, because to get Social Security disability income, you have to have such a low income, you are deep, deep, deep in the poverty bracket.
However, that doesn't mean that the money's not withheld in certain circumstances for taxes.
Yeah, I mean, you could have, if you have too much income, you lose your Social Security disability income.
Correct.
So basically, if you hit the point where you would owe taxes on it,
you don't get it anyway.
They're going to take it away from you. And you can't get it back, by the way, once you do that.
Right.
Okay, well, the question then I have is, I was fighting to get the Social Security disability, and I was in a higher earning bracket. So I was at the max of Social Security, and I got it in one lump sum. They took the $6,000 that they were entitled to, and I got the rest. Now, it's showing up on a statement that I got from the government as a total amount with no taxes withheld, which there was not.
Well, then, you're going to have to – this is an area where you need to talk to a CPA, because the rules are pretty complex here.
Okay.
And there are different categories, and if they show – did you get a 1099?
No.
Okay, when you get a 10 – did you get it this year, the money?
Yes, I got it early February of last year.
No, you got it last year. Then you should have gotten a 1099 this year, telling you.
Yes, I did. I'm sorry. Yeah, I did.
And did it indicate how much of it was taxable on your 1099?
It said zero.
Then it's not taxable. I mean, okay. That was easy.
Yeah.
Read the 1099.
That's where I was confused.
They owed you back. If the government owed you money from when you weren't working.
Yes.
And they paid it to you late. They basically look back to when you weren't working,
and
when
you
didn't have
period.
Any income, and they're paying you for that time period, which means that there's no taxes due on it.
Was your income higher than $25,000 from it? During
during the time, I didn't have any income coming in. I was living pretty much off a 401k program that I had.
Okay.
Then that's, you know, then because you were in such a low position then. But generally speaking, in order to get disability income, you have to not be earning money.
Yeah, and a 401k is actually taxed as if it's normal income. So that you've got, there's some, the reason why I'm asking about the $25,000 is, are you married?
Yes.
Okay, so, and you file jointly. If that happens, according to the Social Security website, and I would recommend you going there first.
Okay.
If you made less than $32,000, then that's not taxable. However, disability is treated a little bit differently anyway. So there are some complexities here, but the Social Security website, you can just do a Google for Social Security disability and taxable. And, make sure that the place that you go to is not helpful tips that for working at home.
You should go to the website that says GOV on it.
Yeah, Go to ssa.gov when you do the search.
Okay.
And
it'll give you more details than you probably want to know.
Yes, there's a...
Okay.
Study it carefully, and you can make a fortune doing people's income taxes.
If you can write this down, publication 10153.
Okay.
And look that up. That will give you lots more stuff than you would ever want to know about your Social Security disability.
And we need to break for commercials, so thanks for calling, okay?
Thank you, guys.
All right.
Thanks.
And it is, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and on the other side, if you want to call us, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Boy, I've done that. I can go home now, right?
Well, we've said our names. Okay. We are done.
There's a really good lead story in Barron's.
Oh, no. Oh, dear.
I think it's in Barron's.
I bet you're going to talk about it.
I think I might want to. It's the Intelligent Investor.
Oh, that wouldn't fit well in this group
right,
of people
right.
Anyway.
There's a guy, there's a money manager that's quoted here whose name is Jean-Marie Evillard.
You must be Russian.
I don't know. Looks like Jean-Marie Evillard to
All
me.
Right.
But,
yes. Mind your French.
Right. Anyway, Jason Swig is the writer in the article. And there's a quote at the beginning of the article. It says, most people aren't cut out for value investing because human nature shrinks from pain. Boy, is that ever a true
What
statement.
You're saying? Human nature shrinks from pain?
Yes.
What?
And the issue...
These wild statements like people don't like pain.
It is a great article. Not just good, great. It really does sum up why investment advisory firms like ours make a nice living. That is that people... by their nature, will not tolerate a good investment very long.
Correct.
Because, by definition...
unless they have help in doing so.
Right. And they don't tolerate. They just basically, we trust you. You're doing something that is so incredibly painful that we would not do it ourselves.
Right.
Therefore, and we can't even do it completely.
Yeah.
We have to put in buffers so that a complete portfolio... isn't subjected to the best investments.
I mean, a great example is the concept of buy low. It is the beginning of buy low, sell
low?
High.
You mean the home improvement store?
No, I do not mean low. I mean low.
Buy low.
Buy low, not
low.
Lows.
W, that's not trade lows. On the New York Stock Exchange.
Right. But low, in order to buy low, first you have to look at something that other people don't like and buy it. Because if they liked it, it wouldn't be low.
Which by almost by definition means something you don't like and buy it.
Right. So this great idea of buy low, then sell high. Well, okay, we've already got to do one thing that's really hard. You have to buy something nobody else likes. Then when it's high, you have to sell something that
everybody
likes it.
Everybody is convinced this could go on forever. It's different this time.
It's
this is
hard to do.
As an example, Apple and... there's probably several others, and I can't think of them off the top of my head, are companies that everybody is convinced has a great future, and as a result, the price of their stock is astonishingly
well,
high.
Well, Apple's just taking a drubbing because people are realizing,
right.
Wait a minute, maybe they didn't.
But people are buying back into it because they're convinced Apple will come up with something new and better.
Because
and,
they always have in the past, except the person that's always done in the past is dead.
Right.
Oops.
So the...
Or what we
and
talked
then,
about last hour,
well,
George Soros with the gold. You know, he's selling gold when everybody's saying gold is great.
Yeah, we get we've gotten a number of calls in. We certainly get a lot of people asking us, shouldn't we be buying gold? Well, guess what? George Soros, who is a very successful investor.
He's making many hundreds of millions of dollars selling gold.
So what is Warren Buffett buying? He's buying
Heinz
food.
He's buying Heinz. Yeah.
You know, and you got to...
Everybody wants ketchup. I mean,
right.
if the world is going somewhere nasty in a handbasket, I still want my ketchup.
Yeah, well, Heinz actually has a lot of things besides ketchup.
I like the ketchup.
Okay. Okay. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, you probably covered this in a previous show, but why do you think, well, first of all, does Congress have to pass a budget every year? And if so, why do you think they haven't? I'm going to hang up and listen.
Okay. Well, does Congress have to pass a budget every year?
They're required by law to pass a budget every year, but who set that law?
Well, actually, they're not required to pass a budget. The Constitution simply says that if we're going to have one, it comes out of the House.
Correct. If we're going to have a budget. Now, the House,
president has got to propose one.
The House has passed a budget.
Mm-hmm.
And it has passed a budget every year for, as you know, I don't remember the last time it didn't. However, the Senate has not passed its version of the budget. And part of that is because the Senate...
it's got to originate in the House, and the one that originates in the House is so totally unacceptable to the Senate that they won't pass it.
Right.
And, the law, there's no constitutional requirement per se, except for the fact that Congress has to authorize spending. And that's the way the courts have held, and that's the way it really works. So if Congress, instead of passing a budget, passes an omnibus spending bill, which they have every year, then that's what gets spent. Basically,
which amounts to a budget, but it's not really a budget.
There's nothing in the Constitution that says budget. So they can do, basically, spending bills have to originate in the House. The president and the administration cannot spend money unless it is money that has been authorized to be spent by the Congress.
And this all stems back not to the Constitution, but to the Congressional Budget Act of 1974. Richard Nixon was just refusing to spend money that Congress had allocated for certain things. He just said, no, I'm going to use that for something else. In essence, a form of sequestration.
Matter of fact, he didn't say he was going to spend it for something else. He simply said, I'm not going to spend it.
Right.
It was called sequestration.
It was. And then, see, this whole thing, the Congressional Budget Act of 74 was to remove the concept of sequestration, that the president couldn't do sequestration. Well, now we have the president being forced to do sequestration. It's very interesting.
And then, of course, there is the PAYGO Act of, I think it was 1994, which was originated under in the House of Representatives when the Republicans took over.
Right. And the Budget and Accounting Act of 21 is where the president has to give the budget to the Congress, and the Congress says, no, we don't care about that, but he still has to do it.
Anyway, so we have another caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, Jeff. The way to solve the budget problem is go to zero-based budget instead of baseline budgeting with the automatic raises every year and have every department justify why you need your budget instead of having a 6 and 7%.
Well, actually, they do.
Increasing the budget every year.
Is your last name Welch? Did you run General Electric at some point?
No, sir, but I listened to him.
Aha!
Okay.
Aha!
Yeah. Well, in essence, that's what we've got going right now, and that's why there have been no budget.
Now, if we took one step further and grabbed what Jack Welch was saying and just fired the lowest performing 10% and gave raises to the highest performing 10%, we would have such an effective government that none of us would be able to get away with anything. There would be no problems there, but I don't know that we want a government that efficient.
And the whole point about zero-based budgeting is, very frankly, I wouldn't have any problem doing it except for one major thing. It would require a dramatic increase in government expenses
to figure out what we're doing,
because everybody would have to go back to zero and start all over again. Basically, it would shut down. Social Security would shut down for the year unless they doubled the number of people involved. I was in the Army.
Yeah.
When we played that game.
Even if we just went to discretionary level and said, well, it's so hard. I like the concept, but the practice of it is so difficult.
Yeah.
They have to come up with reasons why they want the money. And what's happening now is not working very well. it's limping along.
You know, we've got a really big organization called the United States government, and changing it incrementally requires literally everybody that's involved in it today. Starting from zero and redesigning it from nothing would be such an immense, absolutely overwhelming task that it would require. Like I said, we tried that in the Army one year when it was an experiment in an organization I was in, and we spent the whole year doing very little other than working on the budget. And my wife has worked for corporations where they decided to do zero-based budgeting, and as a result, during that time they were doing the zero-based budgeting calculations, she got nothing else. She wasn't doing anything except that. So basically her part of the organization shut down while they figured up zero-based budgeting. They had to go back and account for every piece of paper, and it was a nightmare.
One of the things that we learn in research as well is if you're going to do an experiment, whether it's a medical experiment, any type of experiment to see if the results are better than what was happening before, is easy to look at in the medical world. You do not change the entire system all at once because you don't know what effect comes from what cause. You change each step incrementally to see what happens when I do this. We have distinct results. In the economic world, it is much more complex than the human body in that we have so many interlocking systems. If we tried an experiment like change the entire budgeting process for 20% of the economy now, in the 20% of the economy that is not known for being nimble on its feet, to put it lightly.
Yeah, this is
that
not...
is about the understatement of the millennia.
Unfortunately, there's a reality here.
Unfortunate reality.
Yeah, and it's true in many, many places. There
is,
are
Did you call
no...
it an inconvenient truth?
No.
No, you wouldn't call it that. Okay, go ahead.
That there are no really simple answers to really complex questions.
And that's the inconvenient truth about the movie Inconvenient Truth as well.
Yeah, and the fact is that we have a lot of things that are the very people who holler the loudest in my personal experience about governmental spending are people who receive substantial portions of their income from the government, in many cases for doing nothing. In other words, retired people. And
I know there's a lot of people out there saying, I didn't do nothing, I earned this. All we're saying right now, you're not doing anything, and there is no trust fund sitting there that's paying you. If you're retired pension from the government, there is not a pool of money sitting out there with your name associated with it.
It's part of the government spending.
It's part of the government spending.
And let me give you an example. A lot of people are unaware of this. It's just one of those realities that kind of, if you actually start studying the budget, slaps you in the face. The Department of Defense, now I'm not talking about the Veterans Affairs, Department of Defense. No, this is not the VA, okay? I want to emphasize that.
Defense.
Pays more money to retired military personnel than it does to active duty military personnel.
And you know what brought down Chrysler and General Motors?
This is the point here in this. When sequestration hits, presuming that it does, and I think it may, by the way, at the end of this month, because there are probably enough members of Congress who've committed to going ahead with it.
Right. Just step off.
That it's going to happen, and then it'll be a wonderful experiment to see what happens next. They excluded military retirements from sequestration. So that means that if the defense budget, for example, gets chopped, and it as it does in sequestration, as a larger percentage than any other department, it's got to take that money out of its operational funds for the active duty force, but it cannot touch the money, the majority of its payroll money, which is going to retired persons. As a matter of fact, it has to increase that every year. Therein is the essence of the problem. and I know that, and I have lots of clients and lots of friends who are retired military people, and they are very defensive and possibly with good cause. But I use this as an example of the fact that we have got the government spending a tremendous amount of money. Now, to give you an example, if you were in the reserves and you served long enough to retire, your retirement pay begins at 62. But if you're on active duty and you serve long enough to retire, and by the way, a lot of the reservists were on active duty a pretty good sized chunk of the time period that they were accumulating retirement benefit credits. If you're on active duty and you retire, there are active duty soldiers retiring at 38. And they get 50% of their base pay and medical coverage for the rest of their life. Now, is that right, wrong, or indifferent? That's not my judgment.
It's what they were promised. We're not saying that they weren't promised that. We're not saying that it wasn't earned.
But the fact is we're providing some tremendous benefits to people. There's a simple fact that when Social Security was put together and the actuaries all set it up and they figured it out, most people did not live long enough to collect Social Security benefits.
Right.
They didn't live that long. The majority of the population didn't make it to 65. So we're still running along with a 62-year-old possibly being able to take Social Security benefits. And here's the interesting thing. A person turning 62 today who is not doing something to abuse their body and hasn't done things to abuse their body probably has a good 20 years and possibly longer of life expectancy.
Yeah, there was a big headline in the Social Security world years back in the 1950s. The first person to live long enough to collect more Social Security benefits than they paid in.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big deal. It was a really big deal. This is very strange. She didn't die. She stayed along and she collected more than she put in. That's the norm. It's more than the norm. It is very unusual.
The typical Social Security participant today will collect more than they put in, even, and this is interesting, even at the interest rate that's been paid on the Treasury bonds, which
Correct.
Is the federal midterm rate.
They're going to wind up taking out more than was allotted for it. And that's a problem. I mean, it's a problem. It was not originally intended to be an everybody gets to retire program. It was intended to be, let's stop people from starving to death in old age. Means testing is important.
I'd like to violently change the subject here.
Okay, let me put on my neck brace.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
I do want to make a report. You know, basically we do this every week, and I just realized we hadn't done it. How the stock market did last week.
Oh, that, like, people think that's important
right.
or something.
We'll use the S&P 500 here because it's got a much...
That's not the stock market.
But it's a lot bigger than the Dow Jones Industrial 30.
That's not a stock market either.
No, but let's talk about... We're talking about the S&P 500 was up a whopping 0.12%. Year-to-date, it's up 6.56. For 1 year, it's up 11.65%. Now, I say that it's very different from the Dow Jones Industrial Average. We follow the S&P 500 because it's a lot of the popularly reported indices. It is a lot closer to reporting the whole market. It's about 80% of the value of the market. And it's really important to understand that through this time when the last couple of years, many people have been forecasting some kind of economic disaster, that over the last year, over the last several years, what we've seen is steady economic growth. Admittedly, it's a little slow, and it's going to remain that way, and there's a very good reason for it. And I wanted to discuss that before we get off the air, and we're really short on time, so I wanted to just say this. I just, the Council of Economic Advisors and the administration did some statistical reporting this week that I think is very, very good. We've now been able to look back and say from 2007 into 2009 at the bottom of the economy and the market, the United States economy lost $16 trillion. When I say lost, it vanished.
Disappeared. Doesn't exist anymore.
In other words, of the actual reported value in the economy, not cash flow, value, $16 trillion disappeared. We have replaced about $13.5 trillion of that through house prices, which, by the way, are up very nicely. The used housing prices, 12 months now, up 8.5%.
Right.
Nationwide. Now, some places it isn't true, but some places the housing prices continue to go down. Some places they remain level, but we're recovering.
I wouldn't want to live in New Orleans or Detroit right now.
Yeah. And locally, the prices certainly have not gone up, but we didn't go down as much. But the point I want to make is that we still have, just to catch up to where we were at the end of 2007, we still are missing about $3 trillion from the economy. That's why we have not had inflation. Despite the fact that the Federal Reserve has been buying bonds, which runs the price of bonds up, which effectively creates more value in the economy. And I know people were, if you recall, you've listened to people or seen people on television who've claimed we're going to have runaway inflation because the Federal Reserve is doing stupid things with money. They're running the printing presses. Folks, we're still $3 trillion short of where we were.
Even at the rate of current purchase of Treasury bonds from U.S. citizens by the Federal Reserve, what they call the printing press, it would be years before that bought back the $3 trillion,
yeah. And
many years.
And then we've had economic growth over the period, over the years since 2007. So in order for the value of the economy to catch up to the rest of the economy.
The value of the economy to catch up with the rest
of the economy? To catch up with the cash flow side of the economy.
All right.
We're missing about $6 trillion at this point, and that's why there's no inflation. The second thing is a lot of that has been ignored in the stock market. Stock market is still underpriced. But one of the article I read earlier simply said buying value stocks generally doesn't work for the typical investor because they won't hang on to them long enough.
It's true. It's very true.
They get tired of waiting. You have been listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. This is obviously a radio presentation.
How can you tell?
On Saturday, February 16th, it's live. If you hear it at a different date, then obviously you're hearing an echo from the past. The Personal Wealth Coach is also an investment management firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. We manage portfolios. This is a commercial, by the way.
Oh, yes.
We manage portfolios for individuals, trusts, foundations, and we think we do a pretty good job of it, and we charge fees to do that. And we think that we are worth every penny that people pay us, and
obviously we think that,
and a whole bunch more, or we wouldn't be in business. And if you'd like to contact us, our offices are open during the regular work week from 8:30 to 5:30, and our telephone numbers are 947-1111 locally, or
that's voicemail waiting currently. It's and toll free. It's 1-800-914-7526. It's 800-914-PLAN.
And you can reach us by email at Jeff or Jake, J-A-K-E, at tpwc.com.
As in the Personal Wealth Coach. And you can go to our website. Yes, you can go to our website.
I can.
If you would like. Right. tpwc.com or thepersonalwealthcoach.com, and we have podcasts available for your further insanity.
What further insanity?
Yeah, they're almost there now. Just by listening to us. But if they want to listen further, they can get furtherly.
And I'm going to tell you the rest of the year we'll probably do very well in the economy, and we'll look forward to hearing us next week.
Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood, the best talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEN.